Welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Micro. As always, I hope you had a great week. And you can always find Let's Talk Micro on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Goodpods. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find Let's Talk Micro. As for our social media, I am on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube as Let's Talk Micro, on X as Let's Talk Micro 1, on LinkedIn as Luis Plaza, and I have an email address which is letstalkmicro@outlook.com. So either via social media or via email, you can reach out with any feedback, any suggestions. They are always welcome and appreciate it. So please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, download episodes, and if the app allows you to do so, please go ahead and leave a review. Thank you so much for the support. And if you haven't listened to the previous episode, please go ahead and do so. It was a great episode where Meredith Townsend, a high school teacher, you know, she joined the podcast to talk about teaching microbiology in high school, which is something that most of you are familiar with, that we learn microbiology pretty much when we're in college. So in high school, we take biology, chemistry, and other sciences. But when it comes to microbiology, that's something that we do in college. So she joined the podcast. She talks about what she teaches in her microbiology class. You know, they do gram stains, they do plating. Overall, it's a very comprehensive class. You know, she's doing a lot and she's very passionate. So it's very refreshing to see educators like that out there. And as you know, microbiology is such a complex subject, you know, so much information. So if you start learning it maybe in high school, you have a leg up. It's a lot of material. So thank you, Meredith, for taking the time to be in the podcast. And if you haven't checked out that episode, please go ahead and do so. Meredith's contact information, it's in the show notes of the episode. So if you want to contact her, you have any questions, please go ahead and do so. And like I said, you know, microbiology is a lot of information, things like organisms, antimicrobials. So if you're looking to learn more about antibiotics, please check out www.learnantibiotics.com and the Learn Antibiotics book, available on Amazon. These resources include cheat sheets, practice tests, games, and more, and they are being used by thousands of people worldwide and may be helpful for you or your colleagues. Great resources from Dr. Timothy Gauthier, a great pharmacist. So please check them out. And if you want to support the podcast, as you know, Let's Talk Micro doesn't have any sponsorships or anything. So if you want to support the podcast, you can either, there's a Venmo link or there's a Ko-fi, Ko-fi links on the show notes. So if you want to support it in any form, please go ahead and do so. The links are provided. Well, today's episode is about the Doctor in Public Health degree. And those of you, you know, professionals out there and students, and you're thinking about maybe furthering your education and you're looking at graduate degrees, you know, especially those of you that work in the lab, this may be an option for you. So definitely check it out. Under the Doctor of Public Health degree, there are different concentrations. And in this episode, Dr. Jill Roberts, which is the director of the Doctor of Public Health and Clinical Laboratory Science and Practice concentration of this degree, which is being offered at the University of South Florida in Tampa, Florida. So in the episode, Dr. Roberts, we know, who has great energy, she talks about the program, she talks about the prerequisites, she talks about what was the reason behind designing this doctorate degree. She talks about, I asked in the episode if people with a background in clinical microbiology versus public health, if this is a good fit for us. And she answers all these questions. You know, she really breaks it down and she gives all the information. And I am including the link to the program in the show notes. Of course, as a microbiologist, I asked the question if with this degree we are able to sit for the American Board of Medical Microbiology examination, and we talk about this. And all I can say is that on the website of the ASM, American Society for Microbiology, under the requirements for this examination under education, it says that Doctor of Public Health may be accepted if your additional special training and experience are approved by the board. So all in all, such a great episode. If you think that this is a good fit for you, a good degree for you, definitely check it out. But as I said, I had a great time recording it. Dr. Roberts has such great energy. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. Let's go ahead and listen to it. So, you know, from time to time that I like to, you know, I definitely, the podcast is about talking microbiology. And from time to time, I go ahead and talk lab.
So typically, I talk about medical laboratory sciences, and some directors of programs have been guests on the show. So today I am talking a lab again, and it's about a program, which is a doctor in public health with a public and health and clinical laboratory science concentration from the University of Southern Florida. So with me today, I have Dr. Jill Roberts to talk about it. Dr. Roberts, welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. So let's start with a quick, you know, I told the audience your name and pretty much from the USF. So what else, maybe do a quick introduction for them?
Sure. So I'm Jill Roberts, and I am an associate professor here at USF's College of Public Health. And so I'm also the director of our DRPH concentration in laboratory science and practice. We shorthand it because the name's too long. We have several different concentrations in our DRPH, but the lab science is my area of expertise.
Definitely welcome. And, you know, it's kind of great. And we you know, like in social media, and I remember today, actually, as I was going over some things, I saw a picture from LinkedIn when there was going to be like a talk about this program a few months ago. So it's kind of, you know, great that I'm sitting here talking to you now. So let's go ahead and start talking about this program. Maybe you can start with a little bit of a history and an overview.
Sure, I'd love to. So the way that this program actually got started was because of a publication that came out from University of Michigan. And so there were people at University of Michigan that were interested in how many lab people were actually going to leave the lab. And so we know that there's a lot of loss out of laboratories for many different reasons. But there were a lot of people that were reporting that they were going to retire from the labs. And why this created such a big problem was because there's been changes in accreditation, there've been changes in requirements, and there was nobody to replace them. So all these people that are currently leading the laboratories and currently have passed the board exams to lead those laboratories are going to leave with nobody to take their place. Some people, when they come up through the laboratories, they frequently don't have doctoral degrees, and so they're not able to actually sit for the exams and things along that lines. And so this kind of created a little bit of a panic, right? So who's going to lead all these labs? Now, when I say labs, I'm talking public health labs. That was really the focus. With environmental public health, a little bit on the government side of things, wasn't really looking at the clinical side because that accreditation is very different. And so this was really public health labs. So that got the attention of the Association of Public Health Laboratories, who actually formed a work group. And the work group got together and said, well, okay, what are we going to do? What are the problems that are facing laboratories? Of course, you had things about people not knowing about the programs, people not having money for the programs. But a big thing was, how do we get people a doctoral degree so they can sit for the accreditation exam, the board exam rather, and then they can lead these laboratories? Well, as luck would have it, some of the people sitting on this committee are associated with USF. And so they were aware of our DRPH program. And some of their recommendations were, well, let's build a program. Let's build curriculum that's specifically aimed at the laboratory director. And that was the birthplace. We just ran with it from there.
That's amazing. And one thing that a lot of times, you know, people working in laboratories, and, you know, they already have full-time jobs and family. So a lot of times, you know, the process of going back to school and because there are some programs and I have that sometimes, you know, you can't even work to attend them, some PhD programs. And I'm not too familiar with how all of them are, but I have seen some that are like that. So it's kind of difficult when you already have a family and a full-time job. And then you see a lot of people now that are like, you know, taking masters and doing them online and things like that, and progressing in their education while they still hold their job. Okay.
Yeah. And so that is actually why we looked at the DRPH, not a PhD. So in a PhD, a student is generally doing research for about 4 to 5 years. They're expected to be full-time. That is their job. A DRPH is a professional degree. The person is expected to work in their field and bring their expertise to their education. Now, that's not to say it isn't difficult. Of course it is. You're going to have to leverage, you know, you're going to have to work on that balance between your work and your coursework and your research. But we don't expect anybody to not have a job. In fact, that's a requirement to get into the program, is that you are employed. And so we can kind of touch on that a little bit later on. But all the students in our program are working full time.
Okay, definitely. That's great. Thank you for that. So I know you mentioned that there are some so there are some other concentrations and so you said with the purpose of this degree was to, have something so they could sit in and be directors. Anything else that they can do with it and any other concentrations besides the one in clinical lab science?
Yeah, of course. So our original DRPH was actually the leadership. And so it was aimed at getting people across broad fields of public health that actually were interested in doing these leadership positions. And we got lots of people, epi people, biostats people, people across maternity and child health and all these areas. When we started getting these lab people trickling in various places, that creates a bit of a problem because our education is very different from some of the other people. So you kind of had these sort of stragglers where you said, well, these people could actually benefit from training that's lab centered, thinking about microbiology and molecular biology and the things we do in our day-to-day work, bioinformatics and things along that lines. And so the conversation then, of course, was, well, this is really serving us in many ways. We can not only bring in these public health people, but we can pull our clinical people who are also clinical lab microbiologists. We can pull some toxicology people and we can actually bring them into the lab track, which is a better fit for them. Now, at the moment, we're actually in the process of creating yet another track, which is going to be global health. And that's aimed at people who are doing infectious disease work around the world. And so they're not necessarily going to work in a lab. They're going to be more towards the epi and the biostats mixed in with their knowledge of infection control. So we're building that track out right now as well. Now, what can people do with the jobs? Well, it's really up to them. We've got people across CDC and FDA and UNICEF, and we have a veterinarian in the program. Several clinical laboratorians are in the program. And of course, we've got public health labs very well represented. The majority of our students are public health laboratorians.
Definitely. That's how I am originally, because I had a guest on the podcast that she mentioned that she was going to this program and I had her on. So let's talk about the details of this program. And of course, when the episode goes out, and I'll put a link so people can see the page and study it in detail and things like that. But let's talk about some details, like credit hours, prerequisites and things like that.
Okay, so we'll get into kind of the nitpicky pieces of it. Because we are a College of Public Health, we are accredited by CEEF. And so, like at most places, universities are accredited, plus colleges can be accredited as well. Why that's important is because students that come through our program have to do the CEEF required prerequisites. And so, if a student comes into our program and their master's degree is in public health, they're good to go. They can jump right into the DRPH core and in our concentration classes. However, if their background is not in public health, they've got to do those prerequisite courses. Now, that is something that how they decide to do that is really up to them. Some students will actually register for those courses as non-degree seeking and knock them out before they ever come to us. Other students will just take them when they come here. We do roll them into the program so they can take them when they come here. It will just mean more credit hours in the first year or so, which can be a lot. Of course, people are working. And so, if you actually have those prerequisites done and you're good and ready to go, the total number of credit hours in the program is going to be 46. That's relatively low for a doctoral degree program. Now, that's in a perfect case scenario. So, you take this student who registers one time for doctoral project, take 6 credit hours, knock out their degree, and they finish. That's going to be good. But if a student takes longer, they could have more credit hours. It's really dependent on the student how much they want to put in their time in the actual school versus how much they're putting their time into their work, which is totally understandable. And so programmatically, we have a plan of study. We give students an idea of what we think they should look like, what they should go through course by course, but students have the flexibility to actually change that. What I find for the most part is they take more credit hours, and partly because we offer quite a few certificates. And so some of our students have become interested in our infection control certificate or epi of infectious disease certificate. So they're actually picking up a little bit more credit hours to get those certs while they're here.
Right. And now that you said that, it's one like I told before the audience and like I'm currently pursuing my master's in microbiology and they had the same setup too. Like there were some prerequisite classes, but you were accepted into the program and then in their case, like first semester you had to take them and then you were allowed to move on, but you will still be officially enrolled in the program, which is good. Yeah, so it's kind of convenient, and you're in, and yeah, of course it's going to take you a little bit longer because you have to complete them, but
exactly. And we expect most of our students to not have them because nearly everybody's background is an MS, right? Master of Science, rather than an MPH. And so most of our students are actually doing the prereqs. When they decide to do them is up to them, but most of them do require them.
Okay, that's interesting to hear. And so as far as from what I was reading, is this like an online or in person, or is it like a combination of both?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, but we minimize the in-person because we don't want to mess up people's work schedules. We're trying to really disrupt the work as little as possible, but there are a couple of elements that do have to be done live. And so we have what's called the Summer Institutes and a Fall Institute. And so students will come, and this occurs over a weekend, so we minimize as much work as possible. They'll come here to Tampa for 4 or 5 days. During that time period, we can knock out a whole class. There are certain classes that will actually be finished during that whole time. The point of doing that is to give the opportunities for the cohorts to come together and do some networking and mentoring, meet with advisors, do the coursework, and then really handle any other things that are going on. Students may want to sit and discuss doctoral projects with each other and things like that. We don't have a lot of people very upset about attending those because, as you know, I can hear the roller coasters running at Busch Gardens from here, and it's an hour to Disney. So most people actually work it in to their planned vacations anyway. And so we have those three institutes. Everything else is online and nothing is synchronous because our students are not synchronous. So as of the moment, I have a student in Kenya and a student in Alaska. So we obviously can't plan anything that works in both of those persons' timelines. And so nothing is synchronous. There are due dates, there are due times, but people can work at their own pace and do them in their own schedules.
Yeah, and that's the same with the program that I'm going through right now. And it's just, it's definitely very convenient. And because, you know, you have, okay, so yeah, you have a quiz, you know, this date, and you have the lectures for the week. And then sometimes, you know, you try to keep up and maybe do one every day, let's say. But then sometimes, you know, life gets in the way. And then, okay, today I'm setting aside this day to try to complete as much as I can. So it's definitely convenient. And even it goes by so fast, you know, it's been 2 years for me. And then I'm almost done with it. So just, I've been doing it one class at a time. But yeah, it's like, it definitely can be done. So as far for this program, is there a time limit
for completion?
Yeah. All of the doctoral degree programs at USF, because of our accreditation, have to be finished within 7 years. Ideally, we don't want students to be here for 7 years. Now, don't get me wrong. I love my students. I'm glad they're around. But we don't want them to take 7 years to finish this degree. Theoretically, you can finish it in 3. For that to happen, most students would have to already have the MPH so they can skip the prereqs, right? I have 2 that graduated already this semester in 2 years or 3 years. So they've done it. On average, it's 4. So now, have I had a 7? Yes. As a matter of fact, I've had 2. Both of them got hit with COVID while they were leading laboratories. And so you can imagine what kind of disruption that was and for how many years. And so we have flexibility built into the program for life events, which do, of course, occur. We don't push. A student can take as long as 7 years if they wish. But we hope that people will actually finish in 3 to 4 years.
Okay. Yeah. So most people, yeah, because you try to finish it. I mean, just 7 years in school, it's just, yeah, it's a long time. So.
A long, long time. Now, that's about average for a PhD. But for a DRPH, you can definitely finish it faster than that.
Yeah. Yeah. But then a lot of times, yeah, then students going through a PhD, a lot of times they don't have that full-time job, which is what makes it challenging for.
And they also don't have a master's degree. It's not a requirement. And so they're not coming in with the professional expertise or the education of those coming in for the DRPH, which is why, again, this is a more suitable track for these people, because we're trying to make lab leaders. We're not trying to introduce people as novices in the field. We're trying to make lab managers, lab leaders. And so we need people with that expertise.
Okay. And just to make sure, so if there are people like, let's say, like me and a lot of the audience that's listening, right? So we have our experience is just, you know, most of us, you know, we haven't worked in public health labs. We do, our background is clinical laboratories. So we complete our master's. So is this an option for us as a graduate program?
Yeah, so what I want to mention, though, is there are a couple of admission requirements that you need to be aware of. Number one, our minimum GPA is a 3.0 for admission to graduate school here at USF. Now, most master's degree programs, you're not allowed to go under a 3.0 anyway. And so that's usually good for most people. Two, you do have to have a master's degree in any field. Doesn't even matter. You know, we've got MBAs, we've got MHAs, we got people all over the place. But the last thing that is really important is you have to have some experience with leadership. And so in the laboratory lab, leadership can look very different than out in other places. Some people get very nervous and say, does it have to say supervisor? No, it could say scientist two or scientist three, which tells me, okay, you're an advanced area in your field. Right now, our requirement is for 5 years of experience. We're trying to drop it to two for our track. Leadership wants to stay at five. We want to drop it to two. So we'll see whether we can get that approved. But right now it's five. And so you have to have some experience. You have to be really ideally placed to be a leader in the area. Absolutely do not have to come from a public health laboratory. The program was built on that background. The curriculum is going to look like public health laboratories because that's who built it for us. We're public health laboratorians. But you can come in from any kind of lab you want. We've got lots of clinical people. We've got people working in the major huge diagnostic labs like Quest and LabCorp. We've got people working for some of the platforms. We've got, you know, a student that's working on building the biofire machines and things like that. And so really across a lot of different laboratory disciplines, those students do fine in our courses. Even though we're in there talking about the public health labs, they're bringing the perspective from the other labs, which is just beautiful. When everybody comes together and has that conversation, I mean, that's a major aim for our program as well, is to build those bridges across clinical and public health laboratories, because they don't exist in silos, right? They have to be able to work with each other. And so I think bringing people together is a lot of fun. You notice huge differences. You know, your diagnostic laboratory may say, well, today we processed 6,000 samples today, whereas your other laboratory will say, well, we got four, you know, so it's a very, very different background. But conversely, your major diagnostic lab is not looking at mosquitoes by any stretch of the imagination. There's no profit margin there, right? And so the public health labs are filling this niche, the clinical is filling this niche, and the diagnostic is another.
Yeah, and one thing I think nowadays with the labs, even like in the clinical labs, and when you're in the on the leadership track, you know, a lot of people that are managers, you know, they've been motivated to have master's degrees. So we're seeing that a lot more and more. So like in my hospital and other places, a lot of the leadership, you know, they either have one or they're in the process of completing one.
Yes, it's true. And what we're actually seeing is some of those laboratories are being highly supportive of people to come through our programs. In fact, they've been offering developmental funds. They've been supporting tuition for some of our students. And so, you know, people who are interested, I always recommend reach out to your own organization and see what's available there. Like, do you actually have professional development dollars? Would you, you know, be interested in working with the university on these kind of things? Another thing to pay attention to is we're the only program in the U.S. And so what that means is for certain states, you can actually get in-state tuition in Florida because we're the only one. So if you're in Georgia and certain other states, we have an agreement that allows you to actually pay in-state tuition here. And so definitely, if you're interested in the program, research very closely with your organizations and others what kind of funding may be available.
And one thing I know that we're going to discuss this offline a little bit and about the ABMM. Which I just had an episode on it. And if the listeners, if you haven't checked it out, please go ahead and do so. Great information about that examination, American Board of Medical Microbiology. So is this, with this degree, is it possible to sit for that examination?
Well, we think so. So here's what happened is most of the laboratorians are actually doing the ABB exam and rather than the ASM exam. And so the ABB has worked very closely with us. In fact, our degree program, our projects have to be a certain type of project in order to meet the qualifications to sit for the ABB exam. Now, we think that those qualifications match really well what ASM requires for their exams. However, we've never had a student attempt it, and we didn't work with them. And so we actually don't know whether the ASM groups will actually will accept the PA or the DRPHs. You'd have to really reach out to them and know for sure, but ABB definitely will. And they're the ones that have the high complexity laboratory director exam. And so as of the moment, we've actually had 6 graduates attempt it and all 6 have passed. So with 100% pass rate, we're running way above average for that particular exam. And so again, because we were built on the idea of public health laboratory, that's the direction in which we built our program. Looking at the requirements for ASM though, and as a fellow microbiologist, we're much more used to ASM, right? It looks to me like they match. However, we may have to have some discussion and argument with them to get them to accept the DRPHs. A lot of people don't really realize that DRPHs can be laboratory based. They can involve actual bench research. They've kind of got this image in their mind as a public health is going to be maternal child health and not really laboratory science.
Okay. Yeah. And just for the listeners, you know, you just check out the ABMM and don't everyone quote me on this, but I think when I was reading the things, I think it's, they evaluated, I mean, cause they're specific about 2 degrees and I'm not going to mention right now that they're not acceptable for that examination. But I do remember seeing that a doctor in public health, they can evaluate it. So let me, okay. Is there anything else that you want to add?
The only thing I'd say is if you do go that route with ASM, we'll go to bat for it as well. And so if we need to open up conversations with them and actually bring them into the fold with us, we can. ABB was really very willing to have our conversations. And really, I think that once we got them on board, it was wonderful. And in fact, they've actually even advertised our program for us. And just bringing everybody to the table and making them understand this is very different. A public health lab is very different than clinical. Public health laboratories are regulated different. From state to state, the licensing changes. And so we have to kind of have a different type of flexibility and a different background than ASM does.
You know, this has been so great and I have learned so much about this program, you know, and we talked a little bit before we started recording, but you know, I had seen it before and I have seen it on social media. And so it is definitely great to learn about this. And I hope the audience, you know, learns about it and maybe considers this as an option as well. I mean, a lot of times nowadays, you know, a lot of more people in the lab, you know, they're trying to get more graduate degrees and people are going to school. And so as you're looking through your options, you know, take a look at this and see what you think. I have to say, Dr. Roberts, that I definitely like your energy. Yeah,
thank you.
You're very passionate about what you do, so it's always great when you meet you know, people with that type of passion. You know, it's something that, especially, you know, when you're teaching and right, it's just something that it's good to have, because you know it's a big responsibility, and if you're passionate, it's so much better. You know, your message comes across so much better. So thank you so much for taking the time to being Let's Talk Micro.
Well, thank you for the invitation. It's very much appreciated. And if anyone has any interest or not has questions, please reach out to me.
Okay, definitely. I'll go ahead and can they email you?
Yes, of course.
Okay. All right. I'll go ahead and put it on the show notes if they have any questions so they can reach out. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, of course.
And that, my dear audience, is the end of this episode. I hope you enjoy learning about the Doctor in Public Health degree. As always, I enjoy sharing this information with you. Stay tuned, great things coming your way, great content coming your way. As always, continue bringing that passion to what you do. It's so important. You do such great work. As always, stay motivated, stay safe, and of course, continue talking micro. Until the next time, bye.